Chapter 29. Tracy made slow progress with his work, for his mind wandered a good deal. Many things were puzzling him. Finally, a light burst upon him all of a sudden, seemed to, at any rate, and he said to himself, "I've got the clue at last. This man's mind is off its balance. I don't know how much, but it's off a point or two, sure. Off enough to explain this mess of perplexities, anyway. These dreadful chromos which he takes for old masters, these villainous portraits which to his frantic mind represent Rossmores, the hatchments, the pompous name of this ramshackle old crib Rossmore Towers, and that odd assertion of his, that I was expected. How could I be expected? That is, Lord Berkeley. He knows by the papers, that that person was burned up in the New Gadsby. Why, hang it, he really doesn't know who he was expecting, for his talk showed, that he was not expecting an Englishman, or yet an artist, yet I answer his requirements notwithstanding. He seems sufficiently satisfied with me. Yes, he is a little off. In fact, I am afraid he is a good deal off. Poor old gentleman. But he's interesting. All people in about his condition are, I suppose. I hope he'll like my work. I would like to come every day and study him. And when I write my father, that hurts. I mustn't get on that subject. It isn't good for my spirits. Somebody coming, I must get to work. It's the old gentleman again. He looks bothered. Maybe my clothes are suspicious, and they are for an artist. If my conscience would allow me to make a change, but that is out of the question. I wonder what he's making those passes in the air for, with his hands. I seem to be the object of them. Can he be trying to mesmerize me? I don't quite like it. There's something uncanny about it. The colonel muttered to himself, "It has an effect on him, I can see it myself. That's enough for one time, I reckon. He's not very solid, yet, I suppose, and I might disintegrate him. I'll just put a sly question or two at him now, and see if I can find out what his condition is, and where he's from." He approached and said affably, "Don't let me disturb you, Mr. Tracy. I only want to take a little glimpse of your work." "Ah, that's fine, that's very fine indeed. You are doing it elegantly. My daughter will be charmed with this. May I sit down by you?" "Oh, do, I shall be glad." "It won't disturb you? I mean, won't dissipate your inspirations?" Tracy laughed and said they were not ethereal enough to be very easily discommoded. The colonel asked a number of cautious and well-considered questions which seemed pretty odd and flighty to Tracy, but the answers conveyed the information desired, apparently, for the colonel said to himself, with mixed pride and gratification, "It's a good job as far as I've got with it. He's solid. Solid and going to last, solid as the real thing. It's wonderful, wonderful. I believe I could petrify him." After a little he asked, wearily, "Oh, you prefer being here, or there?" "There? Where? Why, where you've been." Tracy's thought flew to his boarding house, and he answered with decision, "Oh, here, much." The colonel was startled, and said to himself, "There's no uncertain ring about that. It indicates where he's been to, poor fellow. Well, I am satisfied now. I'm glad I got him out." He sat thinking, and watching the brush go. At length he said to himself, "Yes, it certainly seems to account for the failure of my endeavors in poor Berkeley's case." He went in the other direction. "Well, it's all right. He's better off." Sally Sellers entered from the street now, looking her divinest, and the artist was introduced to her. It was a violent case of mutual love at first sight, though neither party was entirely aware of the fact, perhaps. The Englishman made this irrelevant remark to himself, "Perhaps he is not insane, after all." Sally sat down, and showed an interest in Tracy's work which greatly pleased him, and a benevolent forgiveness of it which convinced him that the girl's nature was cast in a large mold. Sellers was anxious to report his discoveries to Hawkins, So he took his leave, saying that if the two Aum devotees of the colored muse thought they could manage without him, he would go and look after his affairs. The artist said to himself, I think he is a little eccentric, perhaps, but that is all. He reproached himself for having injuriously judged a man without giving him any fair chance to show what he really was. Of course, the stranger was very soon at his ease and chatting along comfortably. The average American girl possesses the valuable qualities of naturalness, honesty, and inoffensive straightforwardness. She is nearly barren of troublesome conventions and artificialities. Consequently, her presence and her ways are unembarrassing, and one is acquainted with her, and on the pleasantest terms with her, before he knows how it came about. This new acquaintanceship, friendship, indeed, progressed swiftly, and the unusual swiftness of it, and the thoroughness of it are sufficiently evidenced, and established by one noteworthy fact that within the first half hour both parties had ceased to be conscious of Tracy's clothes. Later this consciousness was reawakened. It was then apparent to Gwendolyn that she was almost reconciled to them, and it was apparent to Tracy that he wasn't. The reawakening was brought about by Gwendolyn's inviting the artist to stay to dinner. He had to decline, because he wanted to live, now that there was something to live for and he could not survive in those clothes at a gentleman's table. He thought he knew that. But he went away happy, for he saw that Gwendolyn was disappointed. And whither did he go? He went straight to a slop shop and bought as neat and reasonably well-fitting a suit of clothes as an Englishman could be persuaded to wear. He said to himself, but at his conscience, no, it's wrong, but it would be wrong not to do it, and two wrongs do not make a right. This satisfied him, and made his heart light. Perhaps it will also satisfy the reader if he can make out what it means. The old people were troubled about Gwendolyn at dinner, because she was so distraught and silent. If they had noticed, they would have found that she was sufficiently alert and interested whenever the talk stumbled upon the artist and his work, but they didn't notice, and so the chat would swap around to some other subject, and then somebody would presently be privately worrying about Gwendolyn again, and wondering if she were not well, or if something had gone wrong in the millinery line. Her mother offered her various reputable patent medicines, and tonics with iron and other hardware in them, and her father even proposed to send out for wine, relentless prohibitionist and head of the order in the District of Columbia as he was, but these kindnesses were all declined, thankfully, but with decision. At bedtime, when the family were breaking up for the night, she privately looted one of the brushes, saying to herself, it's the one he has used the most. The next morning Tracy went forth wearing his new suit, and equipped with a pink in his buttonhole, a daily attention from Puss. His whole soul was full of Gwendolyn Sellers, and this condition was an inspiration, art-wise. All the morning his brush pawed nimbly away at the canvases, almost without his aerity, in this sense being the sense of being aware, though disputed by some authorities, turning out marvel upon marvel, in the way of decorative accessories to the portraits, with a felicity and celerity which amazed the veterans of the firm, and fetched out of them continuous explosions of applause. Meantime Gwendolyn was losing her morning, and many dollars. She supposed Tracy was coming in the forenoon, a conclusion which he had jumped to without outside help. So she tripped downstairs every little while from her work parlor, to arrange the brushes and things over again, and see if he had arrived. And when she was in her work parlor it was not profitable, but just the other way, as she found out to her sorrow. As he had put in her idle moments during the last little while back, in designing a particularly rare and capable gown for herself, and this morning she set about making it up, but she was absent-minded, and made an irremediable botch of it. When she saw what he had done, she knew the reason of it, and the meaning of it, and she put her work away from her, and said she would accept the sign. And from that time forth she came no more away from the audience chamber, but remained there and waited. After luncheon she waited again. A whole hour. Then a great joy welled up in her heart, for she saw him coming. So she flew back upstairs thankful, and could hardly wait for him to miss the principal brush, which as he had mislaid down there, but knew where as he had mislaid it. However, all in good time the others were called in, and couldn't find the brush, and then she was sent for, and she couldn't find it herself for some little time. But then she found it, when the others had gone away, to hunt in the kitchen, and down cellar and in the woodshed, and all those other places, where people look for things whose ways they are not familiar with. So she gave him the brush, and remarked that she ought to have seen that everything was ready for him, but it hadn't seemed necessary, because it was so early that she wasn't expecting. But she stopped there, surprised at herself for what she was saying, and he felt caught and ashamed, and said to himself, I knew my impatience would drag me here, before I was expected, and betray me, and that is just what it has done. She sees straight through me and is laughing at me, inside, of course. Gwendolyn was very much pleased, on one account, and a little the other way in another, pleased with the new clothes and the improvement which they had achieved, less pleased by the pink in the buttonhole. Yesterday's pink had hardly interested her. This one was just like it, but somehow it had got her immediate attention, and kept it. She wished she could think of some way of getting at its history in a properly colorless and indifferent way. Presently she made a venture. She said, whatever a man's age may be, he can reduce it several years by putting a bright colored flower in his buttonhole. I have often noticed that. Is that your sex's reason for wearing a boutonniere? I fancy not, but certainly that reason would be a sufficient one. I've never heard of the idea before. You seem to prefer pinks. Is it on account of the color, or the form? Oh no, he said, simply, they are given to me. I don't think I have any preference. They are given to him, she said to herself, and she felt a coldness toward that pink. Wonder who it is, and what she is like. The flower began to take up a good deal of room. It obtruded itself everywhere. It intercepted all views, and marred them. It was becoming exceedingly annoying, and conspicuous for a little thing. Wonder if he cares for her. That thought gave her a quite definite pain. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.